This is the first podcast out of a series I'm hoping Infinity. Today we're going to talk about the anatomy and examination of the lower limb, and we're going to focus on the lower motor neurons. Before jumping into the anatomy, I'd like to remind ourselves with concepts that are useful when examining patients with weakness. Most nerves have more than one root contribution, which means that if there is a lesion affecting one of the roots that contributes to the nerve, typically the other root may remain intact, and therefore the nerve that is derived from those roots would still have function, which means that the muscle innervated by that nerve, although would probably be weak, may not be as paralyzed as when we have a downstream pathology. For example, let's take a radial nerve infarction. So it will be associated with a wrist drop, complete wrist drop, which could be completely flaccid because there's no compensation by any roots because the downstream nerve is affected. So when you have profound weakness, really think of, in the peripheral nervous system, think of a peripheral nerve problem. Okay, now when you look at anatomy books and you look at the roots and the lumbosacral plexus, it looks like spaghetti. And so what I would recommend is first to think of the three joints that we're testing. In each joint, to think of what are the movements that we're testing. So we're testing the thigh, the knee, and the ankle. In the thigh, we're testing four movements, namely flexion, adduction, abduction, and extension. Okay, and the knee is the easiest because we're testing extension and flexion, so just two movements. And in the ankle, again, four movements: the dorsiflexion, the plantar flexion, inversion, and eversion. Okay, now even those movements, when we'll talk about them, we'll see that one can pair them up into groups that help organize things even further. So let's start with movements of the thigh, and let's start with flexion. Now flexion, if you remember, is done by the iliopsoas muscles, which is innervated by the nerves to the iliopsoas. And you'll see that in some books, this is considered to be the femoral nerve, which is probably okay, but it's actually the very proximal part of the femoral nerve. So it's probably good to distinguish from the femoral nerve itself, because many femoral nerve lesions are more distal. So for example, a classic lesion to the femoral nerve can happen in the inguinal region. For example, if someone has a bleed there or a mass. So that would be more distal to where the nerve comes off to innervate hip flexion, to innervate the iliopsoas. The roots that contribute are mainly L2 and L3, maybe a little bit of L4, but those are kind of high up roots in the lumbosacral region. It's useful to think of flexion is paired with the movement which is adduction, which, remember, you ask the patient to push their knees together to bring them to the midline. And that is done also by similar roots, the L2, 3, and 4, which contribute to the obturator nerve, okay? And the obturator nerve innervates the adductors. So the adductors are the brevis, the longus, the magnus, and then there's the gracilis muscle. When we'll talk about the knee, we'll see how this obturator nerve is actually extremely useful in diagnosing a upper lumbar root problem. Okay. The next two movements which can be paired is, the first one would be abduction, and we're talking about the superior gluteal nerve. The superior gluteal nerve is contributed by the L4, L5, and S1 roots. And it innervates, although it's called superior gluteal nerve, it innervates the gluteus medius, minimus, and the tensor fascia lata. And this is quite helpful in remembering the muscles involved, because the inferior gluteal nerve is inferior because the roots that contribute to it are the L5, S1, S2. Remember, the superior was L4, L5, and S1. So the inferior is L5, S1, S2. So a level lower, and the inferior gluteal nerve, although it's inferior, it innervates the gluteus maximus, which is probably the strongest and largest muscle in our body. So there's nothing inferior about it. So it's so contraintuitive that you will never forget it in your life. Okay? Now let's see how movements of the knee with the movements of the thigh help us understand where the pathology is when a patient comes in with weakness. So the knee is very simple. The knee has two movements, extension and flexion. So we'll start with extension, which is done by the femoral nerve, which is contributed by the L2, 3, and 4 roots, and innervates the quadriceps muscles. It also is useful to remember that this is tested by the patellar reflex. It's the first reflex that we're describing in the examination of the lower limb. The other useful information is that the L2, 3, and 4, we already came across those in testing hip adduction, bringing the knees together. But remember, here at knee extension, the nerve involved is the femoral. In the hip adduction, the nerve involved is the obturator. Now this is a common trick done by neurologists where they test things that have one thing in common and one thing dissimilar. And based on the findings, they can attribute weakness to the appropriate pathology. So in this case, for example, if we have a patient that has isolated weakness of adduction and weakness of extension, and we always like to assume just one source of pathology rather than more than one, if we can help it. So if the patient has isolated adduction and extension, then a better bet would be that this is a root problem, let's say a lesion affecting one of the L2, 3, or 4 roots, rather than a peripheral nerve problem, because if it was a peripheral nerve problem, we would have to assume that we have both a problem in the obturator nerve and the femoral nerve. And that's something that has probably less of a chance than just one lesion affecting a major root contributing to the two. Okay. Now, the other movement of the knee is knee flexion, and this is done by the hamstring muscles, okay, the semitendinosus, the semimembranosus, and the biceps, which has the long head and the short head, right? So biceps. That is innervated by the roots L5, S1, and S2 contributing to the sciatic nerve. And remember, we already met those roots, the L5, S1, and S2. Remember, those are the roots that earlier in the thigh contributed to the inferior gluteal nerve. Remember, hip extension. So we already talked about four movements of the thigh, two movements of the knee, and now we'll talk about movements of the ankle. So the ankle is a little bit more difficult to examine because it's also something you have to explain to the patient exactly what you want him to do. The two easiest movements are the dorsiflexion and the plantar flexion. Now the dorsiflexion is a movement done by the peroneal nerve innervating the tibialis anterior muscle and associated muscles, and is mainly innervated by the L4 and L5 roots. Another muscle that is associated with the anterior compartment of the leg is associated with that movement of the dorsiflexion is extension of the big toe, the extensor hallucis longus, and that is, again, the L5 root is probably the main contributor, and a little bit of S1, but the main player would probably be, in most cases, the L5. Okay, so dorsiflexion, we can look at it as an L4, L5 movement, which is done by the through the peroneal nerve. And remember, the common peroneal nerve is a derivative of the sciatic nerve, which splits into two behind the knee. One of them is the common peroneal nerve, which goes anteriorly in the anterior compartment, and the second part just continues down behind the knee, downwards in the posterior compartment, which is the tibial nerve, and that is responsible for the next movement that we test, which is the plantar flexion, so pushing down with the foot downwards. And this is done by mainly the gastrocnemius and the soleus muscles. And in this case, as we mentioned, it's the tibial nerve with the contribution of S1 and S2 roots, so a little bit lower than the contribution of the common peroneal nerve. Okay. Now, one of the questions that we face is, okay, so a patient comes in with a dropped foot, is it a root problem or is it a common peroneal problem? For example, a person who likes to cross their leg, or a person that had severe weight loss and now their peroneal nerve is exposed to outside pressure underneath the head of the fibular bone. So here, although those next two movements are a little bit harder to examine, they're useful in terms of localization. So the first movement that is worth mentioning is inversion of the foot inward, so turning the foot so the sole of the foot turns medially. And this is done by the tibialis posterior muscle through the tibial nerve. So this is innervated by a posterior compartment nerve innervated by roots L4 and L5. Remember, we already met those roots L4, L5. Those were the roots that contributed to the tibialis anterior, the one that does dorsiflexion. So dorsiflexion, if it goes with weakness of dorsiflexion, if it goes with weakness of inversion, okay, suggests a root problem, because otherwise you'd have to assume two peripheral nerve pathologies, right? Because we're talking about the peroneal nerve and the tibial nerve, so two different nerves. And we always like to assume one pathology if we can help it. Eversion, on the other hand, it's not that helpful, and it's also a movement that is a little bit hard to explain and to do for patients, but it is worth knowing. So eversion by the peroni, the longus and the brevis, innervated by the superficial peroneal nerve, which is another branch of the common peroneal nerve, which splits in the knee. And the peroneus, longus and brevis are innervated, as we said, the superficial peroneal nerve, which derives from the L5 and S1 root. Now it's worth mentioning that the plantar flexion, the movement of pushing the foot down, we said is innervated by the tibial nerve, which activates the gastroc and the soleus muscle. Again, here's a reflex that we can test, and this is the ankle jerk. So ankle jerk actually tests mainly the S1 root. And by the way, it can also be tested electrically, and I think we'll talk about that some other time when we talk about the H reflex. Okay, another brief point that is worth mentioning, and that is a certain situation where patients come in with pain and numbness around the lateral thigh. And this is a situation that we sometimes meet. We're called to see patients in the delivery room, or I've seen a patient who cycled for long distances and his body was in a kind of a flexed position, or sometimes overweight people have this problem. And it is derived by compression of a purely sensory nerve that it goes underneath the inguinal ligament and innervates the lateral thigh, the lateral cutaneous nerve of the thigh, causing the syndrome of neuralgia parasthetica, completely benign syndrome, pretty bothersome to the patient. But for example, if it's associated with pregnancy, then after the pregnancy, the mechanics change and there's less pressure on the nerve, and so ultimately the pain resolves. The important thing about it is that it's a purely sensory nerve and so should not be associated with any weakness. So I think this would be a summary for examination of the lower limb. Just to remind ourselves that we're talking about four movements of the thigh, two movements of the knee, and four movements of the ankle. If one can remember which does what movement and what it is associated with, once you think of things in falling into those categories, I think now the playing field will be a little bit easier to handle. Thank you very much, and see you in the next podcast.